This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show with me, Hannah, and new host, Jez.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, a little bit tired. No, feeling good. Happy
I know.
To be here.
It's always hard. It's always hard in the mornings. We make it just in time. What did you do this weekend?
This weekend, well, we went to the airport last night to pick up our friend, Gemma O'Toole, who just arrived back from the Freedom Flotilla, who attempted to break the siege on Gaza, yeah. Which was pretty amazing. Lots of people showed up, turned up. Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice to see everyone show up. She is amazing. I would have been overwhelmed by the amount of people, but she seems to be on it.
Mm.
Yeah. Little sweetheart. So, on the show today, we are going to first up listen to a segment from the archives for the 21st anniversary broadcast of National Sorry Day on 3CR's Radioactive show. They aired an interview between Auntie Hazel Collins, one of the founder Grandmothers Against Removal. It originally played by the Central Australia Aboriginal Media Association with host Tegan Hughes. Grandmothers Against Removal are an organisation working on the front lines to prevent children from being removed from their families and creating yet another stolen generation. And then up next, we're going to be listening to James McKenzie speaking with Richard Keane, CEO of Living Positive Victoria, for an update on MPOX in so-called Melbourne before talking about research the organisation collaborated on exploring trans and gender diverse living with HIV. And then last up on the show, we're going to be listening to some speeches from the emergency flotilla rally that was on Friday. We're going to be hearing from Brad speaking on Violet's experience with the IOF and him waiting his wife to come home. And then we're going to be hearing from Artaz, a organizer within the Free Palestine Melbourne organization. And then we're going to be last up listening from Mo'ayrad, giving us some words of motivation to keep fighting for freedom in Palestine. Stay tuned.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
At my age, preparation is just part of life. To prepare for viruses like influenza and COVID, I get vaccinated regularly. Viruses are always changing. That's why vaccination really matters to protect yourself against serious disease and hospitalisation. And the risks go up when you turn 65. Vaccination is the best preparation. Speak to your health professional and book your vaccinations today. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
a 3CR supporter.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
These are the news headlines for Monday, the 25th of May, 2026. Reports of the treatment of activists from the Global Samud Flotilla and the Freedom Flotilla are increasing pressure from Israel to clarify their treatment of the volunteers after the shocking footage of Israel's security minister mocking and abusing the detained activists. 430 illegally abducted participants from international waters off the coast of Cyprus revealed physical evidence and reports of repeated physical beatings, prolonged stress positions, the use of tasers, and sexual abuse, including rape and humiliation. Flotilla participants have highlighted their experiences are only a portion of the violence Palestinians face, with far less international media and without protection. Violet Coco, member of the Freedom Flotilla, said, quote, "When you care for what they do to us, know that they do much worse to our brothers and sisters in Palestine. We want you to advocate for them. This is why we put our bodies in this situation, because we wanted to show the world their monstrous cruelty," end quote. Two of the flotilla activists have just arrived home in Nam. Gemma O'Toole arrived last night at 8 p.m. and Violet Coco arrived this morning at 5:30.
Also in news this week, the World Health Organization has reported that a fresh Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo has now killed at least 177 people. There are some 750 suspected cases of Ebola across the DRC and neighbouring Uganda. Health officials, however, believe that the virus has been quietly spreading for 2 months, meaning the death toll is likely higher than has been officially reported. On Thursday, health officials at the Congo River Alliance revealed that the virus had reached the South Kivu province, hundreds of miles away from its epicentre. Local authorities believe that the outbreak began in the Mongbualu region, known for its gold mining. Jimmy Mungurik, country director of Resource Matters, an NGO in the DRC, has told Democracy Now! That the Mongbualu region has characteristics that have allowed the virus to spread easily, such as its, quote, poor roads and not enough healthcare facilities, end quote. Mungurik also said that among locals there is some skepticism of Ebola's existence in the region and that it is viewed as, quote, kind of a curse to the region because of the gold in the area, end quote.
These have been the news headlines for Monday, the 25th of May, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. I want to drop food, not bombs. Hot trains, volunteer at every info shop. I want to give free therapy out in the park. Go to free school, jump to high practice. Drop food, not bombs.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a food, not bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.com. .org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. First up, we're going to be listening to a segment from the archives for the 21st anniversary broadcast of National Sorry Day. 3CR's Radioactive Show aired an interview between Auntie Hazel Collins, one of the founders of Grandmothers Against Removal, originally played by the Central Australia Aboriginal Media Association with host Tegan Hughes. Grandmothers Against Removal are an organisation working on the front lines to prevent children from being removed from their families and creating yet another stolen generation. Auntie Hazel Collins and Tegan speak about the injustices faced by children who are removed by their family by the colonial government. The interview starts by addressing comments aired on Sunrise in March 2018, in which they implied that the stolen generation was necessary and needed to happen again. GMA is holding a rally that they've organised tomorrow on Tuesday at 10 a.m. outside Preston Town Hall, calling for the end of child removals. You can donate to GMA's important work here at BSB 313140 and account number 123249000. Stay tuned.
Let's start with him.
And like my daughter Helen sent me the thing, you know, about Sunrise, and I tell you what, if I was in a room with these people, I'd remind them that their ancestral settlers would be so proud of them. And I'd ask them what they thought of their ancestral settlers, you know, like, apologise to all those people, like my ancestors back in those mass graves, and ask them how do they condone the rape, their settlers raped our women, you know. And as far as taking the kids for their own good, no, that wasn't what was going on. They're talking about something they know nothing about. And and as far as this forced adoption thing, oh, my God. I mean, they go on about Aboriginal people. Well, there's no mention about the black, I call it Black Deaths in Custody, where our children are being killed in out-of-home care and nothing's been done about it. You know, our children being raped and physically abused and mentally abused in out-of-home care, and these are with white people, hello, like, you know. And they don't talk about the non-Aboriginal families that have had children removed. All the focus is on Aboriginal children and us as Aboriginal people unfit to raise children across the board. Oh, don't get me started on my soapbox, darling.
Well, that's actually exactly why I'm here, though, is to give you that soapbox and let you say what you need to say, because these are issues that have affected your family personally. You know, you're
not... That's right. My grandmother was removed, her and her sister, many years ago, and they were put in Cootamundra. And in actual fact, my grandmother was the result of an Irish man raping her mother. And she was extremely fair. And needless to say, he didn't hang around with Daddy. And her and her sister, who was a lot darker than her, were removed and put in Cootamundra. And they weren't there for years. They did escape. But, like, some of the things my grandmother used to say about how they were treated in there. And then I became a grandmother of children removed. And it's not how these so-called good doers portray what actually happened and why.
So let's talk a little bit about, yeah, right now. What is the state of affairs looking like for Aboriginal children in out-of-home care? How prevalent actually is this?
It's very, very widespread, the children being placed in out-of-home care. The damage that is done to these children by having them removed to start with, and the way that removal occurs, where they're placed, dispossession of family members, no family member is suitable to have these children. they're put in out-of-home care with whoever the department deems fit. It is a myth that they're placed with family, because we're 9 times out of 10 deemed unfit. The trauma of the removal alone is lifelong, not only for the child but for the family and communities. When they're put in out-of-home care, quite often they're abused. The department does nothing about it, despite the calls from families and parents showing concern. And these children are given an 18-year sentence for doing nothing wrong. In a lot of cases, the parents have done nothing wrong. Now, we're not nor ever have said that at no time is it necessary to remove a child. We've never ever said that. We've always acknowledged that there are times when the family is in crisis. But in saying that, that doesn't mean that they have to be removed and put in out-of-home care. They can be placed within their own community.
I think that's one of the strongest points about your movement and the fact that it's grandmothers against removals. When people think about the relationship that gets severed, they think of the mother and the child bond. But it is actually so much more than that. Grandparents lose their grandchildren. Aunties lose their nephews and nieces. You know, the pain is felt throughout a family and a community, not just that singular relationship.
That's right. Like, here in New South, the department is called Family and Community Services. I find that laughable in the sense that they do not assist families or communities. They have a process that they have to go through prior to any removal. They bypass that process altogether. The first response is the removal. And often that is a Friday afternoon. Several police are present, as well as several docs workers. Now, they do that because there's no way in the world a family can initiate legal activity until the Monday. So that leaves the families and communities in a distressful situation for an entire weekend, not knowing where their babies have gone or who they're with. They don't put them straight away with Aboriginal families, if they do at all. They 9 times out of 10 put them with non-Aboriginal families. There is a sibling policy within a department that they keep siblings together. That also doesn't occur. They split those children up. So these children are not knowing what's going on, why they've been taken, why they're put with other people. And often it's months before the parents even get to see these children, and then it's in a little tiny room supervised. So with that, if the children ask, "Can I come home, Mum?" you're not allowed to answer that question. You're not allowed to ask where they are, who they're with, are they okay? Because if you do, your visit is terminated. You're not allowed to take photos or anything. You're not even allowed to give them a letter. Otherwise, it's taken and put in their file, and your visit's terminated. So all these things, why you have people, you know, jumping up and down in the air and saying all this is justified, well, no, I'm sorry, but this is our reality, not theirs. They know nothing about what they're talking about. We live this. These people need to sit down on the ground with Aboriginal people and talk to them so they can be a little bit better informed than listening to the department.
I just wanted to ask, what is the sort of age groups that we're talking about, these children who are taken away from their families for periods of months here?
Children, babies, can be taken at birth from the hospital and they're placed in out-of-home care. Now, that's not necessarily with family. The department deems the whole family is unsuitable.
And that's sort of what their loophole to get around the National Indigenous Child Placement Principle. They just deem the whole family unsuitable? Yes.
I myself was deemed unsuitable to have my grandchildren. And I have 36 grandchildren. I raised seven and two, gathered two along the way. And yet I was deemed unsuitable. I could have all my other grandchildren in my home except one set. And they told me I was not suitable. Mm-hmm. They didn't even know me, yet they make that judgment.
Yeah, was there any form of assessment that they came to you with paperwork to fill out or a survey, or how did they have information about you to decide whether you were or weren't suitable?
Yeah, that's just what they said up front. I requested within minutes of my first two grandchildren being removed to have them. I drove over to Tamworth the day after and gave them a letter which they signed, which they stamped and signed as received, to state that I wanted them under kinship. I did a working with children's check, and my husband did as well, and we were both deemed unsuitable, even though the working with children's check came back clear. They tell you, when you question why, they tell you they don't have to answer that. They also don't have to answer why they removed the children, except to say that they have risks, yet you're not told those risks.
Nor does it seem like the family's getting the support to reduce those risks. Instead, the answer is just to remove a child.
Yes.
Mm.
And like, the child isn't just taken from mum and dad or... You know, they're taken from everybody. Like, I didn't get to get my grandchildren came back to me prior to their mum getting them back. It was just over 6 years.
Mm.
And I find the whole process of having to be assessed by a department that fails and indulges in criminal activity... I find it offensive that we have to be assessed under their regime, because the whole system is flawed and it fails. So therefore, they can determine whether we pass that assessment as family members or we don't. We have no comeback if they say, no, you failed. The only reason, like, I have no illusions as to why my grandchildren were given to me. The only reason they were given to me was because of my involvement with Grandmothers Against Removals. Not because they felt it was the right thing to do.
This story's right, this story's true. I would not tell lies to you, like the promises they did not keep. And how they fenced us in like sheep, said to us, come take our hand, set us up on mission land, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. Welfare and the police came, said you've got to understand, we'll give to them what you can't give, teach them how to really live, teach them how. Taught them prejudice, you took the children away, the children away, breaking their mother's heart, tearing us all apart, took them away. One dark day on Framlingham came
mother crying, go get their dead. He came running and fighting me. Mother's tears were falling down. Dad shaped up and stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and you fight me. Then they took the stronger family, took us away. They took us away. Snatched from our mother's grace, said this is for the best, took us away. Set us up again and gave us gifts to ease the pain. Sent us off to foster homes. As we grew up, we felt alone, 'cause we were acting white yet feeling black. One sweet day, all the children came back. The children came back. The children came back where their hearts grow strong, back where they all belong. The children came back, said the children came back. The children came back where they understand, back to their mother's land. The children came back. Back to their mother, back to their father, back to their sister, back to their brother, back to their people, back to their land. All the children came back. Yes, I came
back. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR 855 AM. That was Took the Children Away by Archie Roach. And before that, we were listening to a segment from the archives for the 21st anniversary broadcast of National Sorry Day. 3CR's Radioactive Show aired an interview between Auntie Hazel Collins, one of the founders of Grandmothers Against Removals, originally played by the Central Australia Aboriginal Media Association. You can donate to support GMAR's important work here, with the BSB being 313140 and the account number is 123-24900. You can listen to the full conversation and more of the broadcast from the 2018's National Sorry Day broadcast at 3cr.org.au/sorryday2018.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from
day one. It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop black deaths in custody.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM. Next up, we're going to be listening to James McKenzie, and he's speaking with Richard Keane, the CEO of Living Positive Victoria, for an update on MPOX in so-called Melbourne, before talking about research the organisation collaborated on exploring trans and gender diverse people living with HIV. They also discuss how trans and gender diverse people's identity being removed within HIV records, and how that has prevented trans and gender diverse people accessing help.
Let's start with MPOX. Mm-hmm. What is happening there in Melbourne?
Well, I think we've still got a little bit of a situation where we've got relatively low numbers, but there's some active cases across the community. And I thank you for the opportunity to kind of reinforce our call out in regards to vaccinations for MPOX. It's pretty straightforward. Those vaccinations are free. Particularly for those folks who are maybe men who have sex with men, trans folks, bisexual folks, all of those folks can access vaccination for free. And the importance of the vaccination continues to show today. And I guess there's one of the risks and one of the kind of groups I'd like to talk about today is those folks who might be travelling overseas. They might have saved for a trip of a lifetime. We're coming up to that Northern Hemisphere kind of Pride Month and all that kind of thing. A lot of folks will save for a couple of years and go and do that without knowing that some of those countries you can't access the vaccination in while you're there, and a whole range of things. And whilst vaccination will not 100% cover you from contracting MPOX, what it will do is greatly reduce the severity of the disease and the ability of forward transmission. We're learning a little bit more about MPOX because it's been around for a while now. We've had a number of discussions, James, and again, I thank you for the opportunity to engage around this issue. One of the things that we've kind of found out in that interim period is there's about a four-day period between exposure and the beginning of symptoms. And one of the things that's so confusing is that not all symptoms are obvious. So we talk about MPOX with skin outbreaks and sores and other things like that. But for some folks, it might just be cold and flu symptoms, aching bones. That's the initial kind of response to coming in contact with MPOX. And I think we've spoken about before how MPOX is transmitted. It's usually by body fluids, also skin-to-skin contact with somebody that might be carrying MPOX around. And so really our main tool is getting vaccination. So you need one vaccination and then a couple of months later to get a booster to ensure that that vaccination is fully covered. And while it will not be foolproof in you not contracting MPOX if you're exposed, it greatly reduces the symptoms and also the forward transmission likelihood of you passing it on to somebody else.
We're seeing a cycle in Melbourne. The first outbreak was 2022.
Yes.
Then there was another big one that began in April 2024, and almost like Groundhog Day in April of this year, it was announced in the middle of the month, 12 cases had suddenly appeared in Melbourne, which was much more than the usual one or two that was expected. And then the health department kind of went quiet.
Yeah, and I was trying to look up to get the latest kind of information today. And for folks who are seeking some information about MPOX, some government-led information, the Better Health Channel with the Victorian Health Department, betterhealth.com. gov.vic.au, I think it is. But just type in Better Health Channel and it will take you straight away. It shows the places where you can get vaccination, not only high caseload clinics and Melbourne Sexual Health, but a lot of pharmacies and stuff are also offering free vaccinations around, particularly in the city. If you're living outside Melbourne Metro, hospital IDs and things like that also have sexual health and infectious diseases components to the work that they do, and all have received training about engaging people in a respective way about any concerns that they might have, whether they've been exposed to Mpox. So I think one of the challenges here is that in some ways, we had a very strong uptake at the beginning because everyone thought, oh my God, this is a new thing. I want to protect myself. And folks like me raced in to get a shot in their arm and other things like that. But I guess over time, and one of the reasons that it's really good to continue this dialogue with you, James, is that I think we've kind of the saturation and reach of organisations like mine and Thorn Harbour Health with the communities that they engage with has kind of been done. But there's a whole lot of folks out there that may not be connected to our organisations that may occasionally have a same-sex engagement or something or other, and they may not identify as gay, they may not be out, a whole range of other things. But for those people to consider that as well, and particularly if you're attending sex on premises venues and other things like that on a regular basis, they seem to be kind of some of those areas where there might be an elevated risk, not over the top, but anything that we can do to kind of prevent forward transmission of Mpox, we should do. And we are so privileged that we live in a country that provides free vaccinations for folks when an issue like this comes up in the community.
I remember in April 2024, there were three cases that were unrelated, locally acquired. And within a few months, there were hundreds.
Yeah.
This time it began with 12 cases just appearing in Melbourne. I don't know if they were locally acquired. You would assume that they probably were, but that would suggest, and the health department's gone really, really quiet, it's really secret squirrel, is that there are quite a few more cases in Melbourne now. Do you know what health services are reporting? Because the government's just not.
No, it's hard to gauge that. So it is a notifiable condition. So every time someone is diagnosed with an Mpox case, regardless of where they are, whether it's a kind of small caseload GP or whether it's a larger service like Melbourne Sexual Health or a hospital ED, that information goes then straight to the Health Department of Victoria. And some contact tracing goes on around. So you sit down, you have a dialogue with that person and you talk about where they've been, who they might have run into, and how we can push those messages out to those communities and those specific areas, just to ensure that folks get that vaccination. It's really easily tolerable. I don't think I can recall having any side effects from the vaccination myself when I took it. But it's really, really important just to gently reinforce that message. And I think it's one of those things that might always be around in really, really low numbers. And like you said, we have had a little spike recently after having a pretty long period of time where we were getting maybe one case every now and then. And I'm not sure whether those cases are locally acquired. I'm sure some of them are. But again, we want to reinforce those folks who are travelling. They might be travelling to places and not even the Northern Hemisphere. They might be going across to Bali or across to other places where vaccination is available, but at a high cost. So, for example, in Singapore, I think it's $1,100 that folks have to pay over there to get both vaccinations. So we are really privileged. You should take advantage of that, because by protecting ourselves, we protect others.
So it's a game of wait and see, really, with the health department actually telling us just how many cases there are now in Melbourne. You'd think it was a lot more than 12, but we just don't know. In terms of vaccination, I mean, the vaccination began here in Melbourne in 2022.
Yes.
A lot of people only had one dose. There's two. Plenty of people had two. And then when the second wave hit, quite a few people caught up to speed.
Yes.
How long does the vaccination last? Because you can't get a third shot in Australia, can you?
No, we can't get a third shot in Australia. So as far as we know and as far as the data's saying, it does have coverage over an extended period of time. But how long that is, I'm not quite sure, because it only kind of arrived here in 2022. I guess they're following up. And I guess the other thing that makes it a bit more difficult to decipher is that it's not a 100% preventative vaccine. So, but what it does, if you do come in contact with it, your symptoms are very mild, and like I was saying, maybe flu-like symptoms that could be mistaken for the flu.
So we don't know the efficacy, if you like, of the vaccine 4 years later.
Yeah, no, we're not sure. I haven't seen a whole range of data on that.
Living Positive Victoria is about to release some really groundbreaking research in relation to gender diverse and trans people who have HIV. What can you tell us about that? It is a collaboration with the Australian Research Centre for Sex Health and Society at La Trobe.
Yes, and as well as Transgender Victoria and the Equinox Gender Clinic at Thorn Harbour Health. So Living Positive Victoria had a small amount of money, and we were thinking, for so long, and it's only since 2017 that diverse genders have been collected as part of the HIV data. So up until 2017, if someone was trans or gender diverse, they were put into that data set at their gender at birth. So for a long time, trans folks and gender diverse folks were completely invisible. And as a result of that invisibility, it meant that they weren't included in comprehensive sexual health or HIV strategies because the data just wasn't existing. It was more about science wanting to keep those data sets clean and all that kind of stuff and have no variation. And 10 years on, it's quite novel research. It's the first research of its type in Australia. And we've got a really great group of people who've come and participated in that research just to map out what is their lived experience of HIV, where do they go and connect for their support, is there a kind of separation, like some folks in the survey have come back, and these are long interviews, over an hour long, they sit down and they really map out a whole range of things. Some folks at one end are saying that they're very, very lucky. They have their gender-affirming care and their HIV care in the one place. Other folks don't want anything to do with those two things in the one place. So in some ways, it's horses for courses. But I think what this research does is it provides a foundational base for us to move away from making assumptions around people and what suits them best and giving them the opportunity to tell us what they need and for us to design programs that are inclusive and that enable folks to kind of be visible within the HIV response in a way that we haven't seen that before, whilst kind of maintaining anonymity. You know, all those folks involved, all the details in that research is anonymous, of course. But what it's going to do is it provides a fantastic foundation for us to encourage more research in that area and for us to also lobby government around the supports and other services that might be needed by those folks who have a different lived experience in the way that they connect. And as CEO of my organisation, I used to sit back and I used to go, oh, well, you know, and, you know, admitting my own faults and lack of awareness and understanding. And this is what I was saying about making assumptions about what suits people and what doesn't. Some folks would like to connect with Positive Women's services. Some folks would like to connect with other services that we've got. And they find a place to fit in, but there's no defined place for them as a group of people. And so for a very long time, we were just kind of, I knew they were connecting with us because it was in our membership data and everything else. And I was just making assumptions about where they might be comfortable and where they might fit. And this research really shines a light on those lived experiences and kind of answers some of those questions. You're trying to always do the best you can with every population that you're engaged with as a CEO. But I think sometimes making assumptions or being afraid to kind of move in any direction in case you get it wrong is a barrier for good care to kind of be rolled out and be inclusive and to be informed by those communities. So I'm super excited. There'll be a launch on Monday, June 15th at 4 p.m. For folks who might be interested in logging on online or anything else, you can pop by our website at lpv.org.au with information about how to connect into the first showing of those research results. And we're super excited about it.
Wow. What can you tell us about the results?
I can tell you that it is as varied as that community. I was kind of hoping that there'd be some really key themes that we could follow, but it's a broad spectrum, as is gender, you know. So I think that what works for some people will not work for other people. There were some folks who were wanting their own group and wanting to kind of connect with other trans and gender diverse folks to share their lived experience. On the other end of that research project, there were folks who were quite happy and suggesting to us that we move away from, we become more inclusive of all folks, and that we move away from, I guess, what has been an historically gendered lens in the way that we respond to a whole range of things, really, around our society, but particularly around, you know, groups for women, groups for men, how are those things are separated, and the reasons that they're separated had a strong foundation to begin with. But what we hope to achieve is to be more inclusive and to move away from that gendered lens and find a space where everyone can be quite comfortable to work together, to thrive together.
Richard Keane, the CEO of Living Positive Victoria, always great to see you at 3CR.
Thank you.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
Rally to Save Public Housing. Over 10,000 residents are set to be displaced, with 6,660 homes to be demolished across 44 public housing towers. All this in an ever-worsening housing crisis. Join us at the State Library of Victoria on Saturday the 30th of May at 11 a.m. and then march to the Atherton Gardens public towers in Fitzroy as we fight to save the towers, people's homes and the communities in and around them. After the rally will be a community festival at the towers. The Victorian Labor Government is determined to demolish and privatise public housing and sell off public land to developers. See you on Saturday 30th of May. Together we can stop this madness. Save Public Housing Collective is a 3CR supporter.
At my age, preparation is just part of life. To prepare for viruses like influenza and COVID, I get vaccinated regularly. Viruses are always changing. That's why vaccination really matters, to protect yourself against serious disease and hospitalisation. And the risks go up when you turn 65. Vaccination is the best preparation. Speak to your health professional and book your vaccinations today. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
A 3CR supporter.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
We're celebrating 50 years of 3CR on Saturday the 4th of July at Collingwood Town Hall. There'll be stalls, displays, great food, performances, activities, prizes, and so much more. It's a birthday for us, and we can't wait to celebrate with you. Saturday the 4th of July, Collingwood Town Hall, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Bring your family, tell your friends, all are welcome. 3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Let us know you're coming. Go to Humanitix and search for 3CR to RSVP.
PROTECTIONS.
You're listening to 3CR on the Monday Breakfast Show here at 8:55 a.m. on the dial. That was Protect Trans Kids by Cheap Dirty Horse. And before that, we were listening to James McKenzie speaking with Richard Keane, CEO of Living Positive Victoria, for an update on the MPOX in so-called Melbourne, talking about the research on exploring trans and gender diverse people living with HIV, and they also discussed how trans and gender diverse people's identities being removed from within the HIV records and how that is preventing trans and gender diverse people accessing help.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're on 3CR 855 AM. Now we're going to be listening to three speeches from the emergency rally for the flotilla, which was on Friday night. We hear from Brad speaking on his wife, Violet Coco, and her experiences with the IOF. And we also hear speeches from two organisers within the Free Palestine movement here in Naam, Artaz and Mu'ayrad. Stay tuned.
When Palestine is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When Gaza is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
When children are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
So what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
So what do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge that we're all gathered on stolen land. Treaties were never signed, sovereignty was never ceded. I'd like to pay my respects to the true custodians of the land that we're on, the Wurundjeri people of the broader Kulin Nations, and to their elders past and present. I'd also like to acknowledge this nation state that we call Australia was founded on the monstrous lie of Terra Nullius and was built on the terrorising of the first people of this land. In the same way, that the Zionist settler colonial project of Israel was founded on the monstrous lie of a land without a people and was built on the terrorising of the indigenous people of that land. Let's be clear. Israel is a failed state. Israel is an ethno-fascist abomination. And I stand before you today because my wife, along with 10 other Australian passport holders and a myriad of other beautiful souls from around the world, was abducted by the war criminal, pariah, rogue, terrorist state of Israel on international waters. They were abducted for trying to get humanitarian aid to the starving people of Palestine. They were abducted for trying to break the illegal siege on Gaza. And we all know what happened after that. We've all seen the distressing images. We've all heard the harrowing testimony.
So I won't labour the point. But I will say this. Broken bones don't lie. Bruises don't lie. And unlike the putrid Israelis, trauma doesn't lie. I spoke to my wife for the first time last night, just after midnight, and she said, and I quote, "I have been through hell. I got off lightly compared to the others. I don't have any broken bones, but I do have a lot of bruises." And she was very quick to add that that was just a tiny glimpse of what the Palestinian people have been forced to endure for decades now. So it's up to us to continue this struggle, to keep turning up, to keep applying the pressure, and to demand that the Australian Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, follow the lead of the Spanish Prime Minister and openly condemn these blatant acts of piracy. And publicly condemn the war crimes and the crimes against humanity that have been perpetrated against the Palestinian people. And with great haste, expel the Israeli ambassador and make it abundantly clear that these savages who wear a mask of modernity are not welcome here until the Palestinian people receive the justice and the liberation that they deserve. Now the Zionists and the compliant media want us to think that Ben-Gavir is some sort of aberration. We know that Ben-Gavir is emblematic of that toxic Zionist system. And this is why we've got to end the two-way arms trade. This is why we've got to sanction Israel. And this is why we've got to join the growing list of countries from around the world who publicly declared that they would arrest Netanyahu and his cronies if they set foot on their soil. Because to do anything less is to be complicit, is to be shamefully complicit in war crimes and crimes against humanity. And lastly, on behalf of all the flotilla participants, we are demanding an in-person meeting with Albanese so he can look them in the eyes and hear their harrowing stories and decide for himself if he wants to salvage what's left of his miserable reputation. Free Palestine!
I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respect to elders past and present. Always was, always will be.
Aboriginal land.
Always was, always will be.
Aboriginal land.
Today is a proud day, given that the Salut Flotilla has accomplished great accomplishments. And all activists who participated in it are brave, are courageous, and they really represent the kind of humanity that the world needs right now. And so that's something we need to look at. Even though there is torture, and even though there is the attempt to break them, they could not break them. The whole world, including us, what we see is brave people trying to do the right thing. Because standing with justice is the right thing. And when we say that apartheid will fall, that's what it means, that it's all of us. We will take a stand against apartheid until we see the end of apartheid systems everywhere, the way that we saw the end of apartheid in South Africa. That is the time that is coming today, and that is the movement that we are a part of. We are the anti-apartheid movement of today. That is what the Samud Flotilla shows, because you have 11 citizens all the way from here, including over 400 people from around the world, trying to break borders across nations, representing really what the international community cannot ever claim to represent. They represent the internationalism that we have lost. And because of that, we are seeing genocide after genocide after genocide being perpetuated before our very eyes, in front of the institutions that claim to be the ones established primarily to prevent genocide. It is up to us, the people, the working class, those who are disenfranchised, those who are oppressed, to take a stand against our governments, to take a stand against the international system and say, no more. We will assert a just future. And the Sumud Flotilla is exactly that assertion. This is why they are being tortured and incarcerated. And the Palestinian prisoners deserve solidarity. They deserve not just this little bit of solidarity. We need to break the prisons. We need to break the prisons. We need to break the prisoners free. It is time now for those who are being subjected to capital punishment, to torture, to indefinite detention, to be released back into the world, released back to their communities, back to their homeland. And that is the moment we live in today. No more torture of thousands upon thousands endlessly rotting in prison. Is that the kind of world we want, or do we want a world that asserts justice and upholds justice? Let's fight for the kind of world that we want to be a part of. And let's be proud to be part of that movement and be proud to be part of that struggle. Because when the Flotilla family stand here, they have made that decision. They are saying, we are part of this. We are fighting for this. And they're inviting all of you to fight alongside them. Let's all fight together and let's see a world that wins. Thank you.
I acknowledge and pay respect to the Wurundjeri people of Kulin Nation, whose land I live and work upon. It's always was and always will be Aboriginal land. I don't know what to add after listening to the family members of our great activists who've been kidnapped by the Zionist regime in the international water. It's outrageous, it's heartbreaking to see our government doing nothing but lip service. Binny Wang said something unacceptable. She's not representing Australia. She's representing Israel. Her language defending Binny Kfir and Netanyahu. She should have said, we will sanction Israel now. Because what we're expecting from a government that representing its citizen to stand against such brutality and kidnapping. But Albanese before did nothing when Israel killed 8 workers in Gaza before. He did nothing. He said Israel will investigate that. So a criminal will investigate a crime he committed. How shameful is that? But here we are doing emergency rally to say to the Australian government, you are shameful. You should have taken a stronger step to sanction Israel and Netanyahu. But we also stand firmly with our brothers and sisters, the Australian brothers and sisters who've been kidnapped in international water. Some of them tortured for more than 80 hours. And can you imagine being under the Zionist, terrorist? Can you imagine how hard it is for them to see such brutality and to be subjected for those terrorists? But also, they are courageous, they are great people who take this mission to prove to the world that Israel is a terrorist gang, not even a terrorist state. As a Palestinian, we always has to remember and remind you, the genocide is going on in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Jerusalem. And what Binny Kfir has done, just to distract us from the ongoing genocide, Israel would have allowed the flotilla to reach Gaza and deliver the aid, but they choose to stop it, to intercept it, so they keep going with the genocide on the innocent people of Gaza. We will not allow that to keep going, because we have moral duty to stop it. If our government not going to stop it and not going to be on the right side of history, it's shameful, shameful to see nothing from our government at all. So thank you very much for being here, and remember always that genocide is going on and we will stop the genocide very soon.
There was a tank attack. There was a gas attack. Never a heart attack. Because the beat never goes off. The beat never, never goes. The streets never, never goes. Middle East never, never goes. The beat never goes off.
I'm a little Abu Antar, little Black Panther, ala little Handa, little Biggie, little Pac, Atukan Fatwa, Malcolm in the middle, East, Gaza.
Let the truth come, come, flow pure, thumbs up. I have a clean Dr. King, Abu Tangla. Show your lyrics to bang bang, spitting three lingos, my lyrics to gang bang.
A1,
mic check,
1-1,
name 2.
Fight the occupation, coming straight from the curfew.
Smack you like snares do.
Sick flag,
bird flu.
Stay true.
True.
No, we don't talk blank, we don't talk blank. We bring tires in the starter, then you roll drain. You wanna talk blank, cause I can talk blank. Like Tina Fey, we carry 30 rocks more than ball blank.
There was a tank attack. There was a gas attack. Never a heart attack. Because the beat never goes off. The beat never, never goes. The streets never, never go.
Rephrase it, I wasn't taken to a land, but my land was taken. Maybe native, let me erase it. I'm sacred to dance naked, asking where the rain is.
Maybe, maybe, maybe I am nameless, faceless, even better, raceless.
Maybe, maybe, maybe fish are ready. Ain't nothing but a street thing, baby. So are you down, down, down with it?
And for Palestine, heck, we're pronouncing it.
So are you down, down, down with it?
From the tunnels of Gaza, what's more on the ground than this?
Listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. That was The Beat Never Goes Off by Tamar Nafar. And we were just listening to three speeches from the emergency rally for the flotilla, which happened on Friday night. And last up on the show, we're going to be listening to an excerpt from the Raising Our Voices program from last Wednesday, a special IDAHOBIT, the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia rally. Raising Our Voices is a monthly self-advocacy program which is on the second Wednesday of every month, produced and presented by people with disability. You can listen to more of that program at 3cr.org.au/raising-our-voices.
Today we are here to talk about Ida Hobbit Day, and this year the theme is the heart of democracy. Why is it important to have the theme at the heart of democracy for the LGBTQIA plus community on Ida Hobbit Day?
It's important to have a theme about democracy for the LGBTQIA community because there are so many laws being passed that actually reduce the rights of people in the LGBTQIA community, particularly the trans community these days. For a long time, people in the LGBTQIA community seem to be getting more rights. For example, the passing of marriage equality in Australia, but that actually seems to have reversed a bit recently.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, it was so amazing when marriage equality did pass, but just recently, it's just like the last few years, it's just things going backwards, like with, hard to say where it's coming from, but lots of stuff happening in America, and I think it's bleeding into the rest of the world.
Yeah, even in the Australian elections, there have been people that have been essentially running for parliament with the platform wanting trans women out of women's spaces and out of women's sport in particular.
Terrible, yeah.
And there's been such a lot of really nasty discourse around things like that, even in Australia, though Australia hasn't gone as far as passing laws to restrict the right of people in the LGBT community in the way that countries like the US have.
Mm. And this is why we're doing this show today, is because it's really important to highlight it's even harder for people with disabilities who are LGBTI.
Yep, because those of us who are disabled and queer, we're doubly marginalised.
Yeah.
And if we are also Indigenous or from a non-English speaking background, we might be triply marginalised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone should be equal. Doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, we're all human beings. We bleed the same way. And everyone should be accepted into community.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
it. Doesn't matter what race, culture, where you're from, everyone's equal.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, it's all got to do with intersectionality.
And stereotypes. It's all wrong.
Yeah.
Just get on one another. It's beautiful.
And intersectionality is a difficult word, and some of our listeners may not have heard it before. Would you like to explain it for anyone that the concept's new to?
Yeah. So intersectionality is a term, and it's if you think of what an intersection is, it's about if you meet in the middle, what do you represent? Like a person with disability, you know, you might be a person with disability who is also queer. And that's what we're talking about today, and that intersectionality is, you know, you meet in the middle, but you can't separate it because you're both disabled and queer, whether you identify as lesbian or gay or sexual or transgender, queer, and then you're also, you've got a disability. So, you know, for me, I'm totally blind and my right arm and leg are paralysed, but I'm also queer. So I'm just using myself as an example.
Some people talk about experiencing ableism or disability discrimination in the queer community, but also experiencing homophobia or transphobia in the disability community.
Totally, yeah, experience both.
And a lot of people are very paranoid, and it's all really wrong. We're all human beings. They should, like, let everyone be themselves and express their feelings and emotions as long as they're not hurting anyone, and stop passing raw judgment over people It's so wrong. And being racist, let everyone be in their own community. Doesn't matter if you've got a disability or you're, you know, transgendered or a drag queen or bisexual. Let everyone live their life and be happy.
Yeah.
It's beautiful just to be yourself.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it.
What does Ida Hobbit Day mean to you?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this a bit. I was very shy when I first came out. Also very strong that this is who I am. I like men and no one's going to change it. they can try. It's just who I am. It's not something that I can change. And I think for allies and for people who are just getting their head around that concept, it is what it is and no one can change it. And there are actually laws that prohibit that now in Victoria, at least, to convert people to being strict. It's talking about that kind of concept of to be able to accept people for who they are and let them celebrate that.
That's right.
I heard someone say the other day that why is it important, and them say, well, if you haven't experienced what it's to be queer and you haven't, well, I think all queer people experience the feeling, it's important to recognize that phobia exists. Yeah.
As well as being a self-advocate, I'm a bit of a nerd, but I can't hear the words Ida Hobbit Day without thinking of a hobbit, like from Lord of the Rings, named Ida. There's actually a very good song that was made called Ida the Hobbit, and made because I am not the only nerdy person that thinks of hobbits from Lord of the Rings when they hear Ida Hobbit. But in reality, Ida Hobbit stands for the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia. It actually started as just Idaho, the International Day Against Homophobia, and it's held on May the 17th because that's the day that the World Health Organization took homosexuality out of the book of mental disorders called the DSM. So when the World Health Organization officially recognized that homosexuality and bisexuality and transsexuality were not an illness, not wrong, but a natural part of human diversity. We talk about homophobia and biphobia and transphobia though, and I'm not sure that those terms are really right, because phobia suggests that people are scared. Mostly they're not scared, they're just bigoted and discriminatory.
I think people should be educated and, you know, unique lived experience, you know, to be themselves. And there's a lot of rules and regulations, and organisations have to be a bit more understanding and caring and not so judgment about all this stuff, because people need to feel confident and articulate who they are, not to be scared to show who they really are. And people need to learn and respect society.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think it's a good day for both the queer community themselves to show that we exist, and it's not good to be homophobic for people who are, especially if, you know, some people may have something called internalized homophobia. So I know that I've experienced this when I was a teenager, that I did not want to be queer and it was really difficult. And everyone's in different journeys, I think, for that. So some people don't experience that at all. But yeah, I think it's really important acknowledge that as well.
What are some small things that people can do to be a ally of the LGBTQIA plus community.
I reckon that if people are supportive, then they should show their support publicly. And I know that Kylie's wearing a t-shirt today that says ally on it, so that's pretty cool.
And this one as well.
A pretty cool statement to say that I'm an ally of LGBTI people.
That's right.
Pretty cool. Well, I won't get an ally one, I'll get a queer one.
If people hear or see homophobia or transphobia, they should call it out.
Yep. And how do they do that, though? How do we do that? In a safe way, yeah.
Definitely in a safe way, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you hear a friend or somebody that's in your family or somebody in your workplace saying negative things about the queer community, you can say, I don't think that's right.
I think it's, I don't know, I don't see many people being openly homophobic these days.
I think
maybe it's hard on the spot.
Yeah, I think there's still quite a lot of casual homophobia in sport, particularly in men's team sport, which is why it took so long for there to be any out gay or bi AFL players, for example.
Yeah, and they're still having troubles with that. Even last week, though, you know, they're still having troubles with that kind of stuff in the AFL.
While it's public that there are troubles in the AFL, I think it's like probably across most men's team sports.
Yeah. There's this thing called toxic masculinity. And it's something where, you know, you're trying to be, when you're growing up and you only have bad or inappropriate stereotypes of men, you don't really learn what it means to be a man in a civilized society, and you only learn what a man is, you know, by being with the boys and going down the pub on a Friday night and just being really horrible. And there's so many other ways to be a man than being toxic masculinity.
And Skye, you're right, there's probably a lot less overt, obvious homophobia than there used to be, but there's still an enormous amount of overt transphobia.
Yeah, it's different for trans people. I think, as you were saying before, we've come such a long way with homophobia, but transphobia, they've got a long, long, long way to go. And it's funny that, you know, like, even for myself, as I came out as gay, yeah, like, I know people who still question me about being trans, and like being, the trans journey is so different to the gay journey. It's really, you know, people's understanding of that is not where I would like it to be. So, but that's what this day is all about, isn't it? Trying to break down those stereotypes.
That's right.
People can introduce themselves using their pronouns. And put their pronouns in their email signature. Not only does that show that you are an ally to people in the LGBTQIA plus community.
I'm just thinking about in the workplace, another good way might be to, yeah, show your support whenever, you know, it's talked about. In the workplace, they might be celebrating a certain day, like Ida Hobbit Day, so... You know, if you show your support in some way, like displaying your rainbow flag is a really good idea.
Yeah, education, training, having some events, having a barbecue, having a morning tea or lunch in a community centre, you know, really getting involved and supporting this community, because there's so much red tape and so much judgment and prejudice. It's all wrong. Everyone's equal.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that having we had the Pride Gala recently, talking about community events and maybe having more events at neighborhood houses. Don't be afraid to speak up about the LGBTIQ community.
And that brings us to the end of our show. We were just listening to an excerpt from the Raising Our Voices program from last Wednesday, a special from the Ida Hobbit, the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia. And before that, we were listening to three speeches from the Flotilla Emergency Rally, which happened on Friday night. And second on the show, we were listening to James McKenzie speaking with Richard Keane, the CEO of Positive Living Victoria, for an update on the MPOX and talking about research on exploring trans and gender diverse people living with HIV. And first on the show, we were listening to a excerpt from the archives in 2018 for the 21st anniversary broadcast of National Sorry Day for 3CR's Radioactive show, an interview between Auntie Hazel Collins, one of the founders of Grandmothers Against Removals. There is a fundraiser, there's a rally happening tomorrow on Tuesday at 10 a.m. outside Preston Town Hall that GMA is holding, calling for the end of child removals. Also today there is a soup night fundraiser for Olive Kids and the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. They're going to be having live music starting from 4 and food. And also next Monday on the 1st of June, there's going to be a fundraiser raising funds for Radiothon on 3CR at Hard Out Bar in Preston. And that brings us to the end of our show. Stay tuned for Women on the Line.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.